Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what book was found hidden in the wall of a building in Barcelona in 1846? And what does it tell us about the person who hid it there? ...2018 marks the 100th anniversary of the Jewish community of Barcelona. To celebrate, we're offering you a two-part series on Jewish Barcelona. Dominique Tomasoff Blinder was born in New York and raised in Buenos Aires, Argentina, where she earned a master's degree in architecture from the University of Buenos Aires. Her professional experience includes work in Argentina, the United States, and Spain. Since 1991, she's lived in Barcelona, where she was a founding member of ATID, the Masorti Jewish community. Since 1999, she's been dedicated to the study, preservation, dissemination, and advocacy of Jewish heritage. In 1999, she created the Urban Cultures Project and was also co-founder of the Heritage Commission of the Jewish Communities of Catalonia and of the Center of Studies Zahor for the Protection and Transmission of Jewish Heritage. One of her main areas of interest is the identification and preservation of ancient Jewish cemeteries in Spain, and she was instrumental in achieving landmark designation for the Middle Ages Jewish Cemetery in Barcelona. Dominique works with prestigious public and private organizations, has written numerous articles and other publications, and frequently participates in educational projects and international conferences. This week she's speaking with us about the history of the Jews in Barcelona, and next week she'll introduce us to the different congregations that are active there now. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. Could you tell us about the history of the Jews in Barcelona from the very beginning?
Hello, Linda. It's great to be interviewed by you again. We don't have very exact, precise information about the beginnings of the community in Barcelona, but there's a document from 1300s. It's, in fact, a Jewish document where there is a reference to Barcelona bearing since the mid-800s. That's what they say. It's a community asking for more land to add to their cemetery. They write to the king of Aragon and they say, well, we need more land. So as unclear as the references are, the earliest reference brings us back to the 800s. And they refer to Barcelona having a very old cemetery going back to more than 500 years. And this letter is from 1350, so more than 500 years back. It's 850s. That's, that's all we can take because we don't have any earlier reference. And that's how we can understand that that there is a cemetery, there is a community. How long before were they settled there, we don't know. And, well, I have to tell you, where are these Jews coming from? We have great-great-great-great-grandchildren of those who came with the Romans and with Phoenicians before, if they stayed in these lands. But there's a lot of internal migrations within the peninsula, from France, from the islands nearby. And at that time, the majority of the peninsula, except for a heavy strip below the Pyrenees, was the Caliphate of Cordoba. And we know that there were many times when, there were conflicts, different groups arriving where other groups were established. And very, very likely, many Jews dispersed looking for areas of, more tranquility, more peaceful lands to continue on. But there's little information about that.
Do you have any idea what kind of work they did?
Not in the 900s. In the 900s or 800s, 900s, we're talking about a rural society in Europe, where the cities are small or a little larger, but majority of people live outside in little settlements. And in the Middle Ages, yes, I can tell you, because we have plenty of information. I'm not the one who studies those documents, but there's publications, and I enjoy learning from what others did study and published. So they were involved in all sorts of craftsmanship, like jewelers and weavers and shoemakers, and they made paper and they bound books. Then professions, of course, there are the doctors, midwives. There are some records of midwives in Barcelona that serve other communities also. And there are people dealing in business, like us selling and buying whatever. There's a lot of people involved in insurance bonds for commercial transactions or activities, you know, trade. They bring merchandise back and forth. You need to have insurance. And there were advisors to the court. Don't you think that there are 20 Jews in the court? There's one or two, but in every generation, there's a couple of Jews that are trusted with some court decision, not decisions, but advice, treasury, accounting, and obviously there are money lenders. Even rabbis did money lending. And I always leave it for the end, and sometimes I don't even mention it because it's so stereotypical that people say, oh, in this town, everybody was involved in money lending. Yes, everybody was involved in money lending, plus baking bread and taking care of other things.
Well, nowadays we call them banks.
Yes, you're right. Yes, you're right. And Jews were trusted in many occupations.
So they did have a relationship with non-Jews.
Obviously. There are records where we can read that Jews sold the hinds of the animals to the non-Jewish people. So you slaughter your animals, you eat the front of the animal, you know, you're not going to throw the rest away. But there were periods when the Board of Health, let's call it, of any given city would pass a resolution saying that if you are a vendor and you're walking through the Jewish quarter with some produce that you sell, you can sell fruit, you can sell fish, you know, we don't need to produce everything we consume. If anything is left in your baskets or your carts, it goes to waste, because having been taken through the streets of the Jewish quarter, it was considered to be contaminated by our breath, our souls, our spirits, whatever. So there are ups and downs, and this is interesting because not just Barcelona, for the whole of Spain, historians are changing their discourse a little bit. Instead of talking about the time of convivencia, which is translated to convivialism, they're talking about a time of conveniencia, convenience. It was a relationship where you can take a lot from the Jews. You can also give to the Jews. And the kings benefited a lot from the Jewish participation in their cities, because we paid very high taxes exclusively to the king. And going back to the normal relations, there are plenty of records where you can read that the church bought things from us. Of course, the church rented property or rented from us also, to us and from us. And jewelers would make beads, coral beads, for nuns to make the rosaries. So that's a normal relationship. But business is business, you know, Geschäft is Geschäft.
When are you talking about? You said the Middle Ages. Can you tell us when exactly?
We know that by the mid-1000s, Jews arrived in the city. They are relocated by the counts of Barcelona in those days, and they want them in town because the city will be renovated, expanded, restored to some better status, because it was in very bad shape. So starting in the 1000s, and we also know that in the 1000s, we have already two very good, very important scholars that are still studied in the yeshivot, Isaac ben Reuven and Yehuda ben Barzilai, Talmudic scholars. So the community continued to grow in one neighborhood that was not a ghetto in any way. It was something, probably it's an area that we chose to live in, because in those days there are no concepts of ghettos. The 1200s, the Kingdom of Aragon takes an enormous growth, because there's a king called James I, the Conqueror, who expands the kingdom and makes Barcelona a very important port. Barcelona had a local port, not super important, but by having more territory beyond the coasts, south of Italy, for instance, and the islands in between Italy and Spain, this port becomes very important in the international trade. And that makes the city grow to a size that needs to be protected with another wall beyond the original wall, because most of the city was beyond the outside the walls. The Jewish community also enjoys demographic growth, And if there were about 300 who first started living in those alleys and streets in the mid-1000s, by the 1300s, we are 4,000 persons. 12% of the total population in the city that at that time reaches 32,000. This is a period of very good life, good relations, normal relations, enough violence that we can cope with. I mean, not so much that we can cope with. Normally, it's a period of great productivity in culture, in commerce, in any kind of activities.
So because it was prospering so much, did Barcelona attract more Jews from the outside, or was this just the population that grew?
Both. Barcelona attracts any kind of people to settle here, and there's both situations. We don't have information, unless you read in a document, this person from that city is now living here. We don't have clear records about that. All this good life ended abruptly with a black plague that starts in 1348, and it hits the whole of Europe, and it hits the Jews by the plague, affects the Jews as well, but it affects them in another way, because in Europe they blame Jews for throwing poison in the wells, causing people to get sick. So violence rises, and it rises to points where the communities have to ask the kings to allow them to close the neighborhoods with gates. In Barcelona, they ask the king they need to have a well, because going to the well to pick up water means being exposed to a lot of violence. And the king gives us all those permissions, because he needs us healthy and hardworking. The better we do, the better the kings will do, the more we'll produce and the more taxes we can pay, because taxes are just like today based on your income. So in the end of that century, the 1300s is a horrible century, and we should have left long before 1492. But there was nowhere to go, really. The end of the century brings a wave of pogroms. In many cities, not in all, there were about 600 locations where Jews were living in.
You're speaking about the Iberian Peninsula.
Yes, I'm talking about the Spanish kingdoms of the Iberian Peninsula, thank you. And the first pogrom sparks up in the south of Spain, in Seville, in May 1391, and the same attitude is taken by several priests in other towns. About 80 towns is where the priests will give a message to their congregants saying that they don't, because people complain they don't receive any help from God. What's the matter? We're praying, we're paying, we're coming to services, to a mass, we're doing voluntary work, and we've not seen his face. He's not shown up. And people would move to another faith if they offered a better interest in those days, and they complain they don't want to be Catholic anymore. The job of priest is to make the church grow, and many have the idea they have to give a very clear message. And the message is, look, God has been helping since day one. We are all his creatures, but the problem is Jews live in the heart of our cities, and they interfere with the connection we have with our God. And this gets into people's minds like, we know how to take care of this. And it results in an immediate organized pogrom with people who come. It's usually on market days when the peasants come to town and they are easy to be attracted to revolts, etc. And Barcelona is one of the last cities, because it's like, you know, the rumor spread north, up to the north, and Barcelona is close to the border. And we are attacked on a Friday. It's the 5th of August, 1391. Before us, Valencia was attacked also. And after us, Girona and Castelló de Empúries and Mallorca. Barcelona and Valencia never recover from these pogroms. What does it mean? Many people are killed. In Barcelona, they kill 400. That's 10% of the population. The majority of the survivors will choose to convert, because there's no way you can put up with more violence anymore. And sometimes it's not easy to decide to leave. And the few who will stay in the city, the case of Barcelona is that the few families who stay in the city, they will quickly be surrounded by Catholics who buy the houses we leave behind, or they rent the houses we were renting, and religious orders will settle in the old Jewish quarter. And that's not a place to stay. It's not your comfort zone, and you are such a small minority that you decide we're going to leave. And where do they go? They go to other cities. They don't go to the Balkans yet. They don't go to Italy yet. Maybe some did, but the majority would spread inland to other, or north, right? But to other cities where there is Jewish life. Maybe your mishpacha lives there.
And those other cities weren't affected by these pogroms that were spreading all over the peninsula?
Some were, but now it's an interesting question. It makes me go back to reading more about it. Some were, but the small towns, in small towns this doesn't happen because there's not that volume, that mass to attract, to attack the Jews. And in small towns, everybody knows everybody else and they need each other. It's a much more comfortable way of life. Some were attacked, yes, so they must have moved to the ones that were not attacked by the pogroms, or even those that where the community remained, although in smaller size and worse conditions, but they will continue until 1492. Four generations later, their children will have to make a decision.
Do you know anything about the phenomenon of crypto Jews in Barcelona? Were there any who stayed and kind of went underground?
Obviously, many would choose to practice in hiding, but the practices had to be super discreet. Well, another thing I want to say that you need to find some proof. What are the proofs? Conversion records, baptismal records, which exist, and then accusations to the Inquisition, telling on someone who's practicing in hiding. But these accusations are not always based on true grounds. Many people are accused of practicing in hiding. Like, you know, they accuse people of being a communist in the United States, and there you forget about getting a job. And that's the same that happened here with another tendency. It's a religious problem. In Barcelona, in 1846, they demolished the building. At the entrance, a corner building at the entrance to one of the streets of the Jewish quarter, to build something else. There's an apartment building that's now being sold to developers, probably. In the demolition, in one of the ground floors of floor walls, they found that there were two little books in hiding. These books were hidden in a way that it wasn't possible to take them out every day or several times a day. They were hidden. One of the books is a book of commercial notes by Bartholomew Rodriguez. That's clearly noted on the book. A merchant known to have been from Valencia and living in Barcelona. And the other book, together with this one, is a little sidur, a small sidur, in Catalan, with some transliteration of Hebrew words like Yom HaKippurim or Shema or Shema Israel. It's a book of prayers that includes a brief account of the holidays at the beginning. It's like a small guide to be a Jew in hiding, something like that. The book was studied by a non-Jewish archivist who took an interest in it much later, in 1970s. He finds there are many omissions and inversions of order and many things that are not correct. So this tells us that probably this book belonged to Bartholomew Rodriguez. At least he hid both books. And probably he got it from his family, and probably himself or a generation before decided to put in writing what they had been learning by memory, because it was passed on and on without having any proof of, you know, not leaving anything in writing. And someone had paid a scribe to write for this, for all this account, because the book has scribe's calligraphy. It's not anybody's calligraphy. So this is a clear proof there was someone in hiding. What happened to Bartholomew Rodriguez? He probably hid the proof of the crime and left. I like to say he probably went to France, which was the closest area. We have no idea about where he went and his whereabouts, but he probably married a nice French Jewish woman and they learned to dance can-can. I don't know. Or he probably went to another town nearby, and he probably came back with an AKA and a wig and mustache, and no one knew of him, but no one took the books out. And that's why they were super well-preserved, like airtight.
So what happened to the rest of the Jews, the ones who went to the small towns?
Those Jews will continue confronting the different restrictions that were imposed from then on. It was more than a ghetto. You can read, I read some documents from Girona where the local authority would decide that you have to close all the windows that open outside the streets of the Jewish quarter. So they are creating a ghetto, like what happened in Budapest. They took an area of the city, they built a wall. In this case, you don't build a wall, but you block all that, you make a wall by closing all the openings that look outside the Jewish quarter. And there were many restrictions, and there's often an instructions to new Christians cannot live with their old families anymore. They have to move to other parts of town because that was happening. Sometimes a man converts, he goes back home, he has a kosher meal. On Shabbat, they light candles with their children. And this was a real balagan. This was very complicated to manage because there was double life, and it was also probably difficult for the family themselves. So those people, they continue with their lives whichever way they could. And it, as I said before, in 1492, the edict of expulsion would be read in the public square of those cities, and those Jews will have to make a decision. Are we going to convert, or are we going to leave? And some took one way and some the other.
And is there any evidence of crypto-Jews in those towns, in the towns that were affected by the expulsion?
Not like the book I mentioned before. There are, yes, instructions to correct people, or, you know, there are these telling, in some cases those are correct, those are not false, telling on people who have a double life. And then sometimes when people convert, there would be a reference to them, you know, how do you say, apologizing for having gone the wrong way or things like that. But I don't really look much into those aspects. I don't think I have enough years to go on and study all of what I have to learn.
So getting back to Barcelona after this pogrom of 1391, which decimated the community, what happened?
What happened is that the following king, because kings follow one after the other, Martin el Humano, Martin the Humane, the Humanitarian, he comes to power with a city that has no Jews, Barcelona, and he decides it's going to be stay like that forever. He writes a resolution saying Jews are not allowed to settle in this city again.
That was very humanitarian.
Yes, it was. Well, you should read what they say about Jews in many places in this country, and, you know, it's like everything is very, it sounds very nice, but we always look the worst. They can only come for a fortnight, no more than a fortnight. That's 2 weeks. They can do business, they can visit, they can do whatever. It's basically for business, or probably for, if it's a doctor, they can come to take care of some patient, and they will never settle again. So it's not an expulsion, it's a closing a gate and don't you come in. Remember, I did not say this, but when Barcelona lost the community, the king, John I at that time, he took all the community properties. This is how the kings reacted. They take the community properties, they have eminent domain, and they will dispose of them. Synagogues, cemeteries, some yeshiva or some social center, they will be taken and used as assets to pay in kind. So when Martin the Humane comes to Barcelona, the cemetery is a piece of land used by an order of the church. The stones had been sold, the Matzevot were sold to the builders, who quickly took them and used them for construction. And the synagogues are used by people for shops, for commercial activity, for whatever else. So there's no structure for a Jewish community to develop. He will have to, again, sign a resolution that he allows the Jews who want to settle there to start a synagogue, to have land to bury. He's not ready to do that again.
So the expulsion in 1492 basically didn't affect Barcelona?
All right. No, it affected only in one way, that all the people in the surrounding areas that want to take a ship and go elsewhere, they come to Barcelona, to the port. Not the only port was not Barcelona, but many come by the thousands. They come to Barcelona to take ships. And they must have spent some days here, but I don't know what they did because there was no structure to receive them. I am starting to think about, you know, what happens with these boats that cross the Mediterranean, and there's no structure to receive those people, and they don't know if they're going to be able to stay or they have to continue moving on. So if in fact there were no Jews in Barcelona to make that decision, but they came from the areas around.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
I don't think so.
Thank you very much. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.